Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and I'm so thrilled to bring you your team every day. I wanted to do something a little bit different today because I'm recording this on Monday night, and Monday today was Media Day. And Media Day is a big, weird, confusing thing, and part of what I wanted to do was really give listeners a picture of what it's like, why it's different, and everything like that. And a great way of doing that is also to incorporate some audio. The Warriors are excellent about putting their material up. If you are into it, you can go to SoundCloud/Warriors. They put everything up. I usually record my own audio as well, but you know they do a great job of putting it up. And so if you ever want to hear the work that players do, or you know, media types and everything else like that when they do these appearances, they have it up there. And so I want to do a couple different things, but where I'm going to start is giving a little bit of an explanation for Media Day itself. So what it is at its most basic level is a lot of different things at the same time. So in one portion of the place of the Warriors practice facility in Oakland, you get the interviews. And so that has changed around a little bit, and I'll get into that. But the part that people don't often have a great sense for, and part of the reason why everything is so hectic, is that it is also an opportunity, because they have all the players in the same place and have all this other equipment there, that they do a lot of other work. And so that can be promos for the rest of the year. So the things that are on the Jumbotron involving players, a lot of that gets done that way. It was more work this time, it looks like, in terms of still photos. But all of that sort of stuff is going on at the same time. And also, this year, I didn't get to go in it because I'm not a member of their wonderful organization. But it looks like Comcast was also doing some interview and some work like that as well. So you have players that are there for a lot of this time, if not the whole time, getting a lot of other things done. And so you have all of that, and a lot of it takes noise, especially if they're dribbling basketballs or things like that for the promos or anything like that. It's also surreal because in other years, this was less prominent this year for whatever reason. They have things like, you see players walking around with Santa hats or anything else based on the various promotions that the team has going on throughout the year, because they're trying to do all of that work at once so they don't have to do it for anything else. And so though the people who are involved in PR and everything else for the Warriors are it's a huge day for them, for some marketing, for PR, for so many other people. And one small corner of that is the interviewing. And it is a corner, you know, it is a corner at the facility at this point, which is really what it has been the whole time. When I started way back in 2009, 2010, it was more of a very different format, which was fascinating, and I actually preferred it, which was that they had three or four players at one time, and they would each be sitting at separate tables, and then the media members who were there, which was a much smaller press corps than it is now, would bounce between different folks during that, let's say, 25-minute period. I think it was 25 minutes to half an hour. And there were downsides to that, because sometimes you would have to make hard choices, and sometimes it felt like they would deliberately put people with others that, you know, if they wanted a little bit less attention for somebody, they would put them with somebody else who draw a lot of interest. But what it allowed for was an opportunity periodically to get really in-depth conversations. And one that I'm really happy happened, but that I don't have the audio for anymore, was after Klay Thompson's rookie year, so right after the lockout in 2011, for Media Day, which was also a surreal Media Day because it was, you know, closer to Christmas and everything else, I actually got to have a 5 to 10 minute conversation with Klay Thompson on what he wanted to do with his game, what he was modeling it on, what he learned in his first year. And it was this conversation that really informed it. And then 2 years later, when he had the 37-point quarter against the Sacramento Kings, I was going to go back and write a piece on that. And then shortly before that, my phone bricked and I lost the conversation. But getting those kind of opportunities, because you don't really get that very often during the season, and especially when Klay, at that point, he was a really candid guy, and so we had this conversation about his development, and so that was a benefit to the old format. Now with what they're doing, and I totally understand, especially with the increased media crush on this team, for better or for worse, is that they're having, you know, more like a podium, like if you want to think about the playoffs. So they have one person come up, they have 15 to 20 minutes of availability, and the media members who want to ask questions raise their hand, and they choose who they choose. And, you know, for most people, it's not a problem. But then for Steph and Kevin Durant and Draymond, depending on the answers they get, they sometimes they can't get to everybody. And that completely makes sense. So there are a lot of different ways, if you are a media member, as I am, to think about how you want to get into Media Day, how you want to get through. And so some people want to have a specific angle, so maybe that means that they ask questions to a specific person or to a lot of people about something in particular. Others have, you know, maybe it's a specific thing for somebody else, or they're setting up pieces. And I'm fortunate enough with my own work that I've never really had any sort of obligation, and I'm not denigrating people who have that in any way, shape, or form, but I have a lot of latitude with Real GM, The Athletic, with everything else, including Locked On, to really go where I want to go. And why that is fun in this setting is, and you can notice this for those who follow my stuff, is that when I ask questions of players or coaches or whoever, there is always at the root of it this core idea of it's a question that I really want to have answered. And sometimes you don't get a good answer, but it's that sort of an idea. And so I wanted to give what you could call a director's commentary or a director's cut on some of the questions that I asked, and also some of the other best questions of it. And I will note now that the best answer, in my opinion, from the entire day was Draymond Green on Colin Kaepernick and the idea of protest. And I am including that because it was excellent, but I'm including that at the very end of this. It will be after my outro, let's call it, because I think that it stands on its own, and I think that it deserves to be there without any further comment from me because it speaks for itself. So that will be at the end. If you haven't heard it yet, you can look forward to it if you will with that. But they also have to do, Raymond Ritter, Dan Martinez, and everybody else in the PR staff have to do a tight dance in terms of figuring out the order now that they're in the setting, and it was true even when it was three people at different tables. And generally the way it works is you kind of start small and work bigger because some people are getting there, and then kind of want to have a lot of the heavy hitters, or so they'd be called, it around the middle, and then in case people need to get out and do other things. So it started with Kevon Looney. Looney is still making his way back from his two hip surgeries. He talked about that. You can, if you want to listen to the full thing, you absolutely can. And I wanted to ask him a more conceptual question. And so what I'm going to do for this and all the other ones is I am going to give you the question in full and the answer in full. The only thing I took out with my own questions was my name and affiliation, because you guys don't need to hear that. So this is the entire question and answer. When you're 100%, when you're feeling 100%, what positions do you feel comfortable guarding out there?
I can hold the wing. The 3 and 4 is probably my most comfortable holding. I can hold the 5 sometimes, depending on what type of player he is. I feel comfortable switching out on guards on pick and roll, so I've been feeling pretty good. I get to see more tomorrow playing against some of the best players in the world. But I really feel comfortable holding the wing in the power forward spot.
I thought that was an interesting thing. It was illuminating for me because how players identify themselves from a position, from a defensive standpoint, is really important, because that is something that affects their assignments, the way they see themselves. One that sticks out for me is I asked Anthony Davis this same basic question the day before he was drafted, and he said point blank that he considered himself a power forward until he added some weight, and then maybe they'd talk about it something else. And that has informed a lot of his career. There have been people who've been critical for a while that, well, why didn't he play center? And Looney saying that he's most comfortable guarding power forwards and small forwards lines up with the idea of him being a more of a versatile forward defender, as opposed to the idea of him playing more at the 5. It is also worth remembering that guys often don't want to play what's called playing up a position defensively, because that means more banging and more grinding. And so they might open that door if they want to. But it is good to know that. And if he can actually credibly defend threes, that does open up some creative possibilities for the Warriors, depending on who they play Looney with and against. And I've heard some good things about his offensive capability. And so usually you don't want to slide guys that way, because it creates other sorts of difficulties. Orlando with Aaron Gordon is going to be a good example of that. But having that flexibility is important. And also for the idea of switching, which is something Kevon Looney brought up specifically in that question, that is very important to the Warriors' schemes, especially if they want to move closer to having the second unit emulate parts of the first unit, which is a possibility now that they have some different talent on that end, and they can be a little bit more versatile with guys like Ian Clark, and depending on how they want to use KD, if they want to use him on the second unit. So I thought that was a really interesting answer. And then the next man up was Anderson Varejão. He was asked about various things. I actually found out that he was offered a ring by the Cleveland Cavaliers and has not yet decided whether he's going to take them up on it. So that was news in a sense, and I thought that was interesting. And I was towards the end of it, and I wanted to ask a very basic question. That was how he was doing physically.
How's your back feeling right now, and how close were you, or how was the decision in terms of playing in the Olympics?
I'm good to start tomorrow with the team. I'm probably going to ease myself into it. I'm not going to go too crazy because I haven't done any contact yet. But I'm feeling pretty good and ready to go. But it was really tough for me to not play in the Olympics. My decision was to not play because I had some... I had to see three different doctors, and they all told me the same thing. And then I decided to don't play because it was a risk for me to don't play the Olympics to complicate things during the Olympics and maybe end up having surgery, which is not the case right now anymore. So I'm feeling pretty good.
So that answer didn't really break any new ground, but it was informative in an important way, which is that he wasn't really ready for the Olympics, and that the possibility of surgery was something that I hadn't heard. And so by being more patient with it, he can do that, but that he's ready to play is important because it will be evaluation. While all of the speculation, we can call it that, is that he will be on the team, it is also important to note that him being there is better for figuring out what they have in JaVale McGee and what they have in everybody else. And so him being ready to go, even if he's easing himself into it, is a very good thing for this team, even for those of us who have been, let's say, critical of him. Next up was Steph Curry. Steph was, you know, it was a kind of a standard interview for him where he, you know, he has a very different perspective on stardom than a lot of other people. And so there was conversations my friend Ethan Sherwood-Strauss asked him about, you know, perceptions and things like that and people commenting, and he said he didn't care. And the most interesting answer came on a question that was also good, but kind of was going in a different direction. That was Comcast Monty Poole asked about Durant and just kind of the fit and all that kind of stuff. And Curry's answer on that was illuminating for a couple different reasons. So full question, full answer.
Steph, we know you over here, you know, you and KD go back a ways, but how much have you studied his game over the years? And the other part of the question is, are there parts of his game, because he's known for scoring, are there parts of his game that you think people might be a little surprised by, or at least their eyes will open up to what else he can do?
No, he's a well-rounded player. Like, he does score the ball at a high rate. He can do it all sorts of different ways. But in our offense, the way that we've gotten to where we are as a team, even before KD, is about ball movement, player movement, a flow and a rhythm to it. It's not a lot of standing. There's not a lot of one-on-one kind of stuff. So knowing or thinking about how he'll transition into it, that he can do all of that at a very high level. He can pass. He can move without the ball. I think he understands. He's a very high basketball IQ when it comes to where he needs to be on the floor and how he can work off other guys. And I know he just wants to play the game the right way, you know, hearing that come from his mouth. So that fits in right to our identity. But there's still obviously a transition when you have so much talent, you got to figure out how to blend it all. But everybody has to be, you know, at 100% of themselves. There's no sacrifice. There's no, you know, changing your style or anything. It's just... when it comes to the full picture of our team, you know, it'll take a minute to flow.
Why that is important in my eyes is the idea of one of the biggest questions with this Warriors team is, will they let Durant replicate what he has done before? And there are a couple of different theories on why that is a good or a bad thing, but what Curry is getting at is the idea that Durant meshing and with the ball movement and player movement that have made the Warriors so successful offensively is something that is good for him too. And that is a very salient point in all of this. And it's also important to hear it from somebody who was in the room when the Warriors were selling, or whatever you want to call it, Kevin Durant in the first place, because there was this idea, and it was part of my argument on Dunked On in various other forms, when, after writing the Durant piece and all the time from last November to now, is that Durant was coming with the knowledge that of what the Warriors were and what they were going to do. And seeing Curry say that flat out, that it was good for Durant and that that was what they expected, that he expected them to do, is kind of important. It's not necessarily predictive in terms of anything, but it is a good thing in terms of his mindset. And next up was David West. David West is one of the other key additions to this team. He will play a large role, and he had a couple of good answers, and one of them was to my question, which was the last question, I think, of his time. And it was phrased in a specific way, because he talked about how, you know, the experience for the Spurs the year before, and so what that inspired in me, it wasn't a question I planned on or anything like that, was how the experience in San Antonio affected his decision this summer, because, you know, not only did he make a similar decision, but he chose not to go back to the same team. Here's what he said.
You talked about your experience with the Spurs last year, but how did that experience inform your decision this summer in terms of choosing a team or a situation?
Well, I mean, it just helped in terms of, you know, knowing the caliber, you know, of organization, you know, obviously the caliber of players that are needed, you know, but having that comfort level of being able to go into an environment like San Antonio where they have system guys and guys who've seen just about everything, and being able to apply, you know, those concepts, you know, to myself, and felt like I learned, and I can bring some of what I learned here and anywhere going forward.
Again, it's an informative answer that isn't necessarily all that surprising. The Warriors are a special situation. You could say they're more analogous to what the Spurs were last year than the Spurs are this year because of Tim Duncan retiring and everything else. And though that hadn't happened when David West made his decision, you can certainly see a lot of the through lines in it. And the idea of conveying some of their lessons is an interesting one, because Kerr has tried to do that as well. And there are a lot of, you know, parallels between these two franchises. Mike Brown has a connection, I believe, with the Spurs as well. So to see West be able to do that with the other players is important. I'm going to, I think, skip a little bit forward. I don't have the order really, really rigid in my head, but Zaza gave some good answers, Kevin Durant, but the next one that, besides skipping the Draymond one, which I'm going to have at the very end, the next one that I wanted to bring up was Klay Thompson, and Klay answered questions on, you know, following the 3-1 stuff and what happened there and everything like that, and I asked him a question that's been looming in the back of, in the front of my mind for a while now. And again, full question, full answer.
Have you noticed the difference physically for when you, let's say, play the whole first quarter and then rest to start the second versus when you get pulled out earlier and then come in the second? And do you have a preference between those two things?
I mean, if you make, you know, 5 or 6 shots in a row, you want to stay in, you want to go till you miss. So there's no preference for me. It's, I know I'm going to play a lot, so it's not about playing, you know, the whole fourth quarter. I know Steve likes to use me with that second unit a lot as well, fresh, you know, start second quarters. So whatever's best for the team, you know. I think I'm in good enough shape to be able to play 40 minutes a night, but we got such a deep, talented team, there's no need for that, and it's such a long season.
So what I was trying to get at here, and Klay got it, but it was a hard thing to necessarily answer in this setting, is that there are players who have preferences in terms of the way they're used, whether it's, you know, playing a whole first quarter or, you know, when they rest is probably a good way to do it. And it's not only when they rest, but it's what that means in terms of who you play with and who you play against. And so a lot of players do really say the deference thing of, oh, I'll do what the team wants. And that really is what Klay was getting at, especially towards the end of his answer. But the reason why I phrase it in terms of physically is that there are also these open questions in terms of rest and what's better for players and what they do. And there are a lot of other factors. And so my, let's call it dream of that question was to get Clay to say, you know, oh, it's a little bit better for me if I have this rest early, because then I can get something, or, you know, the other way around, whatever it can be. And there are players who do have strong preferences on that. That's something that I have gleaned, let's say, in the last 7 years covering the Warriors in the greater NBA. But it is completely understandable that either he is not one of the players that has that preference, or that he didn't feel like sharing it. He is completely allowed to do that. We can ask questions. We cannot force them to answer it in that way. And then after that, there were a few other people. Kevin Durant had a series of good answers. He explained, talked a little bit about his tattoos, which was interesting, and picked songs from Tupac and Rick James, who were the subjects of his tattoos. And, you know, his process, and a lot like Curry in the sense that he is, and this is true of his entire career, that the idea of what the naysayers are saying tries not to, says it doesn't affect him very much is something, but if you watched him when he was on Any Given Wednesday, Bill Simmons' show, one of the differences between the two of them is it seems like Durant keeps a much more active inventory of what that is, if it doesn't affect him. So that is certainly interesting. I don't know how that's going to be, but there wasn't anything really groundbreaking in there. And I also didn't get to ask a question. I don't even think I raised my hand. I don't think I really had anything for him. And then the next guy up was Andre Iguodala, and Iguodala had a lot of insight on various things and how he is excited for the adjustment and getting with Durant, which is something Curry and Draymond also discussed, with the idea of, you know, having something different to work around, and that was there. And as he was giving one of his answers, I thought of this question, which was a parallel that I hadn't really considered before this, also because Iguodala hadn't done this kind of media availability since July 4th when Durant made his decision, so I decided to ask.
3 years ago, you left a very successful situation to come and join the Warriors. What has surprised you the most about that experience, and what have you really taken away from it as you move forward?
The experience of just...
Or that was so successful.
Yeah. I think you kind of try to see the future a little bit. I know it's hard to do, but you try to see, you know, how you fit into a situation. It's kind of like picking a college, you know. You know, where suits you best, you know, the city life, on the court success, the family life, and, you know, felt like a lot of positive things would come with selecting this market, and it has been more positives than anything. Tenfold what I thought. Been around some great characters, great people. We have a great front office. Bob Myers and I have had a great relationship. Had a great relationship with Mark Jackson and his staff. You know, Pete Myers is one of my great friends, and has some really good relationships with the staff we have now with Steve Kerr. And I'm learning a lot from him, which is going to help me, you know, when I'm done playing my basketball. And then off the court, you know, I'm sure you know what I've been trying to get into, and they've been really accepting of me. So it's been a lot of fun, and just looking forward to continuing having more success.
And I think while it wasn't necessarily the intent of the question, it gives a great insight into why Andre Iguodala is very different from a lot of NBA players. Not only the full embrace of the long game, but the long game beyond even his playing career and everything, you know, with that. And he alluded to the idea of, you know, that he's part of what he has done during his time with the Warriors is, you know, learning about investing, learning about Silicon Valley and everything like that. And that is true. You know, that is something he has gotten out of it. And the idea that he brought up, and Zaza Pachulia brought this up, of, you know, knowing what you're looking for and knowing what you want out of your situation is something that's very important. And that is also a big part of why teams should be worried about the Warriors as being players for free agents. I mean, assuming Durant comes back, they're not going to be players for big name free agents, but these kind of minimum type guys is because they can cultivate this idea of a really special opportunity, and that can be special in a lot of different ways. I mean, you can also consider that Harrison Barnes, you know, had a good career with the Warriors. You know, we can define terms as we want, but he was able to take whatever you want to call it, he was able to turn that into a max contract offer from the Dallas Mavericks, saw Leandro Barbosa get a lucrative deal. Most Bates, we don't really know what happened with him. He probably turned down more money somewhere to make that happen. Don't really know. But so that gets into this interesting thing of if you see these players like Zaza Pachulia do well, and whether that translates into staying with the Warriors or going somewhere else if they get money, that can open the doorway for other people to do exactly the same thing. And there are these questions about what the next collective bargaining agreement will look like, but no matter what, they're going to give tools for any team to get better. And one of the nuances, one of the facts of life that cannot be legislated away, no matter what the CBA entails, is that if players want to take less money, they can go where they want. And that's the moving issue. You know, if we're not talking about draft guys and, you know, players who were taken in the first or second round, that is a big mover. And Zaza Pachulia is a great example of that. And the more the Warriors do to make that a good decision in the minds of players, the more of an impact it will have. And that is something that over the next 2 to 3 years, especially if Durant re-ups, that will be a big storyline here, because if they can keep getting maybe not a starting caliber player, but, you know, somebody of value for the taxpayer mid-level exception, which is basically going to be what they work with, which is actually larger than what they used to get Zaza Pachulia, depending on the new CBA, that is a big advantage. It's something that was a hallmark of the Miami Heat teams, that even though they didn't have these huge ways to get better, they were able to get Ray Allen and Shane Battier on those deals, and Mike Miller the first year, you know, that they were able to get him for what I believe was the mid-level exception, or at least mid-level exception money. And there is really nothing that the league can do to prevent the Warriors from doing that as long as ownership is willing to foot the bill, and the bill on those guys is always going to be small because they're going to do that. And so, as was the case with David West last year and this year, is that if a player is willing to leave a ton of money on the table, then you're going to have to let them do what they want. And if that affects competitive balance, so be it. So that was a big takeaway for me from the day. BJ is always this surreal experience because it is trying to accomplish so many things at once. And many of them do not involve basketball to a really intense extent. It involves, you know, the business of the sport and making sure fans are engaged and all that kind of stuff. And that is incredibly important. I'm not trying to knock it at all. And the other part of it from a personal level that is fun and weird and different is that it is, for press members, a lot like the first day of school when you were a kid, because a lot of it is also about seeing what people did on their summer vacation. So, you know, some of the people you've kept more tabs on, your closer friends in it, so you know what they did. But then other people, there are a lot of people there I hadn't seen since Game 7 of the Finals. And so you're seeing all that, and that's fun. You know, as media members, the personal relationships can change. They can be very different. But a lot of them are kind of an analogy to the school thing. I mean, you have some that people that you're friendly with, some people who you're more like genial acquaintances, some people who you don't like that much. And it is always interesting to have those kinds of conversations. And media day is often when it happens, especially during the downtime. So my hope is that this podcast will give you a better idea of really what that is like. If you have any further questions on it, I'm pretty happy to answer it. I mean, there are certain things that are unanswerable. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings or anything like that. So those parts of it won't be. But if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, at Danny LaRue, DannyLeroux, or DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com, I will do it. And if I can answer it, if it's anything like that, I will. And I will answer it on the podcast so that other people can do it. Because if you're asking the question, there are probably other people that are interested as well. And that will be something that can be incorporated over, you know, the next few episodes, depending on when those responses come in. It always depends on when people listen to the pod and everything like that. So there will also be more listener stuff. This week is actually kind of filling up a little bit. I'm very excited about that. Got a couple of guests for the next few days. But I will always try to take some time, especially if something really good comes in, to answer questions of that sort of nature. And if you want to follow Locked On Warriors, you can do it in a lot of different ways. My Twitter and everything else is fine. But you can also go to Locked On Dubs on Twitter, LockedOnWarriors@gmail.com, Locked On Warriors on Facebook. I promise I will get better at making sure I post the episode. I'm very good at Twitter. I sometimes forget on Facebook. I want to get better at that. And I'm trying to make it the goal that that's really all they do is just letting people know that there's a new episode up. I'm not going to spam with it. I will also use both of them to solicit questions in the future. So that would be a recommendation for if you want to follow or like it or, you know, depending on the thing. And, you know, that'll be important at some point in the future, just depending on how all of this goes. And as I say on seemingly every episode, if you like what you're hearing, there are a couple of specific things that you can do. You can subscribe, which makes sure that you download every episode. That matters. Also, rating and reviewing the show is great. One thing I would be great, I haven't looked at any reviews yet. I generally try to avoid it, except sometimes with Dunked On, because there's some nice stuff. It's good. But the reason why is because if there's more substantive criticism, it's a lot better to do that with me personally. And there are a couple reasons for it. But the biggest one is that reviews are a lot more permanent, and if you want to actually get it to affect the show, reaching out to me personally is a much, much better way to do it, because I've said before, I read everything, so you can do that. I'm not going to say, hey, don't write a negative review, because I'm not that kind of person. I mean, I want you to convey your truth, whatever that is, but it does make it harder, and you know, the more positive things we get, the more people hopefully connect with the show. Still building up steam, getting ready for the regular season, but I hope you're really enjoying it. If you aren't, but you want to keep, you know, kind of keeping tabs, reach out to me. It is very important to me to make sure that you are all enjoying this. And so I've already gone through the ways to contact me and everything else. If you are a football fan, you should definitely check out the Locked On podcasts related to the NFL. We have Niners and Raiders, and both those teams had notable games over the weekend. Negative for my Niners, but the Raiders won, so good. That's good for them and for their fans. So you can listen to those. They do great work. It's a really talented roster on all of the Locked On podcasts, but Niners and Raiders do a particularly good job, so you can check that out. And as promised, I want to end this with ESPN's Rachel Nichols question and Draymond Green's answer to the Colin Kaepernick protest thing, and I think he made a lot of salient, interesting points here, and that's why I wanted to let it speak for itself at the end of the episode. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Draymond, media day all around the NBA, there's been a lot of guys who've been asked about anthem protests, race relations. LeBron just gave a long talk on it. You guys are some of the most visible, empowered young black men in this country as NBA players. Why do you think it is important for you guys to speak out on what you feel about what's going on nationally?
I think it's important to speak out because we're human. You know, I think a lot of times people say, oh, they should talk about this or they shouldn't talk about this. And, I mean, me personally, I can really care less of what somebody think I should or shouldn't do. I am human. I have the right to speak out or do whatever I choose, and as well as other guys. Now, you know, with the platform that we had or that we have, you know, I think a lot of people say, oh, they should speak out because people are watching. And I think that's all personal preference. I think there are a lot of changes that need to be made. And, you know, it's not just the killing of black people. I mean, that's obviously rough and crazy to me. But, like, there's a lot of changes that need to be made in this country. And I think, you know, obviously everybody's been talking about, you know, the kneeling and stuff that Colin started. And I respect Colin for that, you know, because he took a stand that he knew would probably create some controversy. And he didn't care. And I respect that because, you know, sometimes controversy is needed in order to get a point across. And I think he's gotten his point across. Now, my question is, like, what's next with people taking action, you know? And because, like, now that the conversation has started and he's done a great job of that, everybody want to criticize him kneeling down or say he's disrespecting the flag or disrespecting the military. It's not disrespecting none of that. He's trying to show people that there needs to be there's something that needs to be done. And, of course, if you turn on TV, everything people want to talk about is Colin Kaepernick's kneeling down and disrespecting America. No, he's not. But nobody want to face the real problem and talk about the real problem. So we're going to talk about what he's doing and try to sweep what he's really talking about under the rug. And I think it's pretty ridiculous, you know, to be quite frank. Am I going to kneel down or put my fists up? No, I'm not. And that's no disrespecting Colin or anybody else who's doing it. But the point is out. Like, the point, they've gotten the point across. I don't think I need to come out and do this national anthem protest because it's already been started. It's already a conversation. But like I said, the question is it going to be something done about it? Like, you can continue to kneel and do all these things, but if nobody's really trying to make the change, I think the number one problem is the people who see a problem with what he's doing. Because that means you're trying to focus on what he's doing and not focus on what he's talking about. And that's the problem that we have as a whole anyway. So, I mean, I think it's a very touchy subject. It's something that definitely needs to be done. And I think people are trying to take the right steps in doing that. I'm actually involved in the group I'm on the board of Rise to Win, which was created about a year and a half ago, pretty much to face these issues. And it was started by Mr. Stephen Ross, the Dolphins owner of the Miami Dolphins, and I'm happy to be a part of that. And, you know, we have some things that we're working on, and I look forward to being a part of it all. But, I mean, I'm not going to come out and take a knee and say I'm protesting. Like, I don't need to come out and say I'm protesting because I think it's wrong. And that's what the protests say, and I don't need to take a knee to say it. I'll just say it. It's messed up. And it's need to be some changes made. And until then, we'll keep going at the same point. You know, why this guy get killed, why that guy got killed. I mean, there's people's lives out here being taken, and yet somebody want to criticize what Colin's doing. But they won't criticize what's going on. So I think it's pretty ridiculous that someone can't come up with a solution or people can't be penalized for their actions. I've been penalized for my actions, and I'm okay with that. Other people not being penalized for their actions is pretty ridiculous to me.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.